This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. This week, we're pleased to bring you part of a great presentation given by Paul Weber, the president and CEO of CitizenLink, at the North Carolina Family Policy Council's Major Speaker Dinner event in Charlotte, North Carolina, in November 2015. At CitizenLink, which is a public policy partner of Focus on the Family, Paul is responsible for strengthening an alliance of nearly 40 state-based family policy organizations like the North Carolina Family Policy Council. He's also responsible for training statesmen, advancing pro-family public policy, and giving voice to citizens who believe in a biblical point of view. Prior to joining CitizenLink, Paul served as an executive with Alliance Defending Freedom, or ADF, for nearly 14 years. In the following excerpt from his address, Paul explains how seven key decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court changed America and brought us to where we are today. He also shares some helpful advice on the way forward for pro-family citizens. Now to Paul Weber.
I hear from believers around the country, it seems like the moral decline is accelerating. Christians more and more are expressing hopelessness. I saw a statistic that said that 80% of Christians believe that Kim Davis should have just resigned. She should have quit her job. You've probably heard that a few times, right? Tell me, friends, what jobs do you think Christians, because of their faith, are now unqualified to do? All government jobs? School teachers, coaches, like we're seeing with the Washington State football coach. How about small business owners? Should small business owners who are Christian now leave their businesses because they should be forced to approve of same-sex marriages? No? My friends, when we disengage, we're giving in by default, and the outcome of giving in is ultimately worse. Founding Father John Adams said it this way: we have no government armed with the power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. That's fancy language, basically saying that any government can't contain us if we're immoral and without a religious people. Okay? He said, our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. So how do we fall so far so fast? I call this the slippery slope. Seven critical Supreme Court cases that changed America. The first one is in 1947. It's called Everson versus Board of Education. This case, brought by a New Jersey taxpayer against a tax-funded school district that provided reimbursement to parents of both public and private school children for taking public transportation to school. In other words, parents who were sending their kids to public or private school were getting reimbursed for that to help kids go get a good education. And yet this case codified into law and in our culture the phrase separation of church and state. Where's that found in the Constitution? Nowhere. We know that. We're a smart group. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution reads this: Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. When this phrase first came about, it came about through Thomas Jefferson. What his original intent of this message was is that government cannot encroach on the affairs of the church. And yet, what's happened through this separation of church and state lie, which was introduced by the ACLU in a friend of the court brief, which was used as a wedge to erode our religious liberties. This phrase then found its way into the majority opinion written by Justice Hugo Black. And this is what Hugo Black has said. He said, the First Amendment has erected a wall between church and state. That wall must be high and impregnable. Now, I just read the First Amendment. Is that what that amendment means? I don't think so. Yet the phrase separation of church and state has since become ingrained in the American culture. And that's where the slide began, in 1947. Lee versus Weissman, 1992. This case was based on the Everson case and other subsequent cases. It dismantled the proclamation of prayer in public schools. Now, there was a lot of other cases that led up to this. One was called Engel in 1962, 63, somewhere in there. But this abolished even voluntary prayer. And that's what we're seeing in Washington now. We have this coach in Washington who's simply praying. Anybody who wants to come volunteer to pray, they can. But this abolished that. You know, interestingly, our third president, Thomas Jefferson, used government funds to teach the Bible in public schools. Hardly any problem with separation of church and state there. So two key cases, 45 years apart, one generation, one biblical generation, and God was eliminated from the public schools. This case called Griswold versus Connecticut. This case was about birth control. And you know, what it really gave us was this idea of personal privacy in marriage. The opinion of the court said this: the right of privacy is based on the Bill of Rights, which have penumbras formed by the emanations from those guarantees that help give them life and substance. Can somebody tell me what that means? Golly gee. Do you know what a penumbra is? You ever look at the moon? See that glow around the moon? That's the penumbra. Okay? You kind of have this vaporous vapor of stuff happening in the Bill of Rights. This flowery language was further expanded in 1972 in another case called Eisenstadt versus Baird. This right to privacy then went from married couples to individuals. Okay? Important. Married couples to now individuals. Because right after 1972, then we had the killer case, Roe v. Wade, which has led to the slaughter of 56 million Americans since that time. Okay? That right to privacy laid the foundation for Roe versus Wade. But the Right to Life community never gave up, and they thought they had a case in 1992 called Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Instead, what they didn't count on was an 11th hour flip-flop by one of the justices, who wrote in a joint opinion that expanded abortion by establishing in law what is known as the mystery clause. Don't you love these language things? Mystery clause. That reads, abortion is a fundamental 14th Amendment protected liberty. At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concepts of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and the mystery of life. In other words, I can define life any way I want to define life. What nice language wrapped in the sound of liberty. This was in 1992. Fast forward to 2003, a case called Lawrence versus Texas. This ruling extended the right to privacy provisions to gay sexual practices. Again, based on that right to privacy. At the time, and I remember this, I was working at ADF, I remember when this case was decided, the homosexual community came out loudly has said, this case has nothing to do with marriage. This is just about two people doing what we want to do in the, you know, in our own home. It has nothing to do with marriage. They didn't want to tip their hand on that. And yet just 12 years later, you know, Obergefell versus Hodges, the recent Supreme Court decision that ushered in same-sex marriage throughout the land, despite the vote of legislators and people in 31 states to amend their constitutions that marriage is between one man and one woman, only to have it overturned by one judge. Marriage, the basic building block of any thriving society, was redefined. And with it, those who don't abide by this opinion are targets for persecution. This is the Supreme Court. What is the point of this history lesson? I just want to share a few observations with you. These changes in our Constitution and our culture were not made through elected representatives of the people. They were made by unelected and unaccountable judges, with and through the influence of the ACLU and Planned Parenthood, and frankly, legislators that couldn't get it done, so they deferred to the courts. If you look at that Lee versus Weissman case, that Planned Parenthood versus Casey case, Lawrence versus Texas case, Obergefell versus Hodges case, one man wrote the majority of those opinions. Anthony Kennedy was appointed by Ronald Reagan. Elections have consequences. But Ronald Reagan's first choice was a judge by the name of Robert Bork. Remember that name? Bork was borked. The guy's name was turned into a verb. Robert Bork, before he passed away, said this: "When the law is silent on a matter, the judiciary must not act." That's the way a judge should behave. So what was the original role of the judiciary? It's to interpret the law established by the legislature, not create it ex nihilo, out of nothing. Only the Lord can do that. The framers of the Constitution understood this clearly. And Founding Father Alexander Hamilton said this. He said that the judiciary is beyond comparison the weakest of the three departments of power. So we fast forward to 2015 in a recent decision overturning marriage. Justice Antonin Scalia in his dissent summed it up this way. He said, "Today's decree says that my ruler and the ruler of 320 million Americans coast to coast is a majority of 9 lawyers on the Supreme Court. The opinion in these cases is the furthest extension in fact, and the furthest extension one can even imagine, of the court's claimed power to create liberties that the Constitution and its amendments neglect to mention. This practice of constitutional revision by an unelected committee of 9, always accompanied, as it is today, by extravagant praise of liberty, by nice flowery language, robs the people of its most important liberty they asserted in the Declaration of Independence and won in the Revolution of 1776, the freedom to govern themselves." The second point of this history lesson is this: we did not get here overnight, my friends. This has gone on for 70 years in a culture accelerated by judicial activism and lack of accountability. It took a lifetime. Our opposition to ACLU and Planned Parenthood and now the administration has worked relentlessly and systematically and has frankly shown more determination to their cause of immorality than the body of Christ has into promoting good. What we need more than ever are faithful Christians who have a long-term view and are willing to step up and support and serve and act and engage the culture and support organizations like the North Carolina Family Policy Council. The battle for the future is a battle for religious freedom. It was never about marriage, my friends, for the gay community. It was never about that. It really wasn't. It was a stepping stone to forcing American culture and Christians to accept the lifestyle. That's what it was about. So the battle for religious freedom will rage on. We will stand in the gap every step of the way, just as the battle of life will continue and the lies of abortion. And now what you're seeing is physician-assisted suicide is raging across the country. We're working so hard against that. So the battle for the ability to live according to the dictates of our conscience will continue as long as we have people like John Rustin and his allies, men and women like him, and those like you who frankly are willing to support us. And I'd ask you to help other people understand what we're doing and ask them to support us too. Get to know us. Get to know what we're doing. And I'm asking you to stand with us.
You've been listening to a speech given by Paul Weber, the president and CEO of CitizenLink, at the North Carolina Family Policy Council's Major Speaker Dinner event in Charlotte, North Carolina, in November 2015. Thank you for listening, and if you would like to learn more about the North Carolina Family Policy Council and our Major Speaker Series dinner events, please visit our website at ncfamily.org. Again, that's www.ncfamily.org. Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800. or visit our website at ncfamily.org.